¡Órale!
Bienvenidos and welcome to the Familia FFP Podcast. This is un episodio muy especial, familia, muy especial, because I'm telling you, I've got an invitado de lujo that is really, really, it's a buen amigo. Some would say primo, hermano, everything, but I had the pleasure of working with this man during my first several years with the Dodgers. In fact, he's a part of the reason why I got in the door. He literally rose from intern to VP of communications at the Dodgers and later went on to a bigger job leading communications, marketing, and other fun stuff at the Arizona Diamondbacks. Though a few months ago, he got the call to the Hall. He is now El Presidente of the National Baseball Hall of Fame and relocated his family to Cooperstown, New York. So, oh yeah, one other thing, familia, he is a fantasy football aficionado and someone I've had a few battles with over the years. He's also a fellow San Fernando Valley native. Go Chatsworth High School, I'll let you shout him out. And someone, I call him a friend. And there might have been a couple times where we sprayed champagne and beer on each other in clubhouses celebrating. But and also, since he speaks Spanish, I'm also adopting him as a primo of la familia. So everybody, un muy bienvenido especial to mi amigo, Josh Rawich. ¿Cómo estás, Josh?
I'm doing great, Jorge. How are you doing, buddy? Good to hear your voice and good to see you.
Oh, it's so good to see you. It's so good to see you on YouTube, everybody. Please make sure to like and subscribe us. I forgot to mention that at the beginning. I was so excited to get into this show. Mi amigo, you know, it's been a few months now. And has all of this, you know, the relocation from Arizona to Cooperstown, New York. I know your wife's a native of New York, but has it all sunk in, you know, kind of looking around and being like, this is my office now, this is where I work?
I mean, yes, it's sunk in, because the reality of it is it's every day. I've been here just about 3 months. I think next week, I want to say is 90 days since I took over as president. And every single one of those days, I've had some sort of pinch me moment where I just can't really believe that this is what I'm doing. And today's, I wandered into the plaque gallery. They just put up the Christmas tree in the middle of the plaque gallery, and you just standing in there by myself. It was early, and you can't really even grasp, when you grow up a big fan of the game, that I could even be, forget working here, but then actually being the president of the organization is just, it's beyond my wildest imagination.
Now, do you remember the first time you visited?
I do. I was with my dad actually back in 2001. My niece was born. My sister was living in Brooklyn at the time. And so we came out to meet my niece, and my dad and I just kind of, we had an extra day to kill towards the end of the trip. We literally drove up for the day. There are so many memories that you just kind of, you remember of your first steps on Main Street. And first time I walked in and saw Jackie Robinson's plaque, or I saw, there was a cornerstone of Ebbets Field. I remember taking a picture of myself next to it. And I think anybody who's ever been here, it's such a special place that you really do. Everybody remembers their first visit, their first impressions, the plaques that jump out at them, kind of depending on who they grew up rooting for. So, lots of memories from that first visit. And then the two times after that, I was able to go back in 14 and 15 for, I went in 14 for Joe Torre and Tony La Russa's induction. And then in 15, I went with Randy Johnson as part of the group that helped him come in from the Diamondbacks. So I had three trips to Cooperstown before I moved the family across the country. And now we're living right here in the village.
It's so incredible. I mean, honestly, you know, just having worked with you and calling you a friend, I mean, just so proud of you. I know I've told you this, but I just want to say it again. On Facebook and on Instagram, you guys put some really fun pictures of your drive across the country. Getting to end up at Cooperstown. I know there was one particular place in Iowa that came with a really cool picture, but what are some of the highlights of that trip across the country?
Well, we basically plotted it all around the Field of Dreams game. We knew that we were going to be moving in August, and so we kind of planned the road trip. I love planning travel. As you know, I'm a big traveler. Mm-hmm. My wife really, she just said, take us wherever you want to go. I don't care what the route is. And so I basically planned for us to be in Dyersville on August 12th. And then the rest of it was just kind of fun stops along the way. So got to see Josh Souchon. A shout out to the former Dodger pre and post game show host. Souch is the broadcaster in Albuquerque. So I got to see him. They had me actually throw out a first pitch at the Albuquerque Isotopes game, which was pretty fun. We got a chance to stop in Texas. We saw family in Kansas City. And then ultimately, yeah, we went to the game at the Field of Dreams. And it was, I think a lot of people think it was the best. It was really the best event MLB has put on in years. Every single thing about it was so perfect. And, you know, you talk about kind of when does it sink in? I mean, Pat Courtney, who's a vice president at MLB and kind of one of the commissioner's right-hand men, he had gotten me the tickets. And so when we got the tickets to the Field of Dreams game and we started walking in with my son, my son and I went early, and then my wife and daughter had to meet us up because we had a dog at the hotel. It's a long story. But anyway, as we were walking into the seats, they had put us like third row behind home plate. And my son kind of looked at me like, are you serious? And when I texted Pat Courtney a thank you, he said, you're the president of the Hall of Fame. Where else was I going to put you? And I thought, God, man, it really, you realize how lucky, how incredibly special this place is and this position is. So yeah, great trip cross country. Got to show our kids where we met in Indiana, and then we ended up here in Cooperstown.
And you got to play catch, right?
We did. Yeah, we actually went in. Actually, part of that was one of the coolest things I think of the whole trip. We started to play catch on the field. We got in the day before, so I think August 12th was the game. August 11th, we pulled into Dyersville at like 3 in the afternoon. So we went to the what was going to be a high school game beforehand. I think it was maybe a youth game. 14, 15 year old. And so on the side, we were kind of playing catch and the rain started coming. And we kind of just followed out there. They had lightning concerns. So they basically said, everybody needs to go inside. So I just kind of followed Ken Rosenthal, who I was with. And I didn't realize that I was following him into what was basically the private Fox barn. And so we look up and my son and I are now standing, we're sitting with Ken Rosenthal, David Ortiz, Alex Rodriguez, Frank Thomas. And I literally like introduced myself, Frank, I'm the new president of the Hall of Fame. Hey, what's going on? Good. And then he introduces me to A-Rod and Ortiz. And I'm just like, my son has just got this, like, I can't believe we're sitting. And then we basically spent an hour and a half in this barn. John Smoltz and all the Fox guys, Brad Zager, another former Dodger guy. Anyway, all of us, we eventually got back out. And then we got to finish the game of catch with my son at Field of Dreams. And it's the best. It was an unbelievably special experience.
So with lightning concerns, it was kind of like the natural meets Field of Dreams. So
yes, quite a bit. But thankfully they got the game. And I know that they put so much time and money into this game. And the biggest concern was if it gets rained out, you can't really make it up. It's not the sort of place you could just get back to on an off day in August, September. So it worked out perfectly. They thought of everything. I mean, literally from the entrance as you walked, when you parked your car to go to the game, you parked by the movie set. Everybody was playing catch on the field. So there's hundreds of parents and kids playing catch on the field. And then you walked into the corn. And when you came out on the other side of the corn, there was audio piped in. You hear, is this heaven? And the guy says, no, it's Iowa. And then you're standing here looking up at the actual Major League Stadium that you're going to play. They did it incredibly well and really just a really special experience.
Yeah, and the players cooperated by having a walk-off victory in one of the best games of the year.
Pretty unbelievable, yeah. Pretty. You'll never be able to match that first one again, but I'm glad they're doing it again. I think it's pretty neat.
Unreal. So you got there in time for the first induction weekend. So obviously, you know, to be there on that weekend and see some of the greats, obviously we lost some greats in the last year and a half, but just to see so many people coming back and these new guys, any highlights kind of stick out to you from that weekend?
Yeah, a couple. I mean, certainly the reason we wanted to make sure we did this in person this year and brought people back was because we had lost 10 Hall of Famers over the last kind of 14 months. So it was obviously a chance for all of the living Hall of Famers to come back and really just reminisce about these guys. And a lot of them didn't get to have funerals because it was during COVID and all that. So I'd say the things that jumped out at me probably is the two biggest moments that I'll never forget was one. I mean, you're on the stage. I mean, talk about not belonging somewhere. But I mean, at one point, as I'm welcoming Hall of Famers onto the stage. And so my childhood baseball card collection is just literally coming to life, sitting all around me. And Larry Walker's cracking jokes on my left, and the commissioner is sitting on my right. And I look out and I see Michael Jordan and Patrick Ewing are sitting right in front of me because they're there for Michael Jordan. Excuse me, they're there for Derek Jeter's induction. And I just thought to myself, like, this is surreal. I'm looking out over a crowd of people that include the greatest basketball player of all time. I'm surrounded by the best living baseball players. I have no business being up here, but yet I am. So that was probably the single biggest kind of wow moment. But then the other thing that I think is just incredibly cool about this position and this weekend is that every on Sunday after the induction ceremony, in this case, it was a Wednesday, but every induction ceremony, they have a dinner that night that is called the members only dinner. And it is basically only the Hall of Famers and the commissioner of baseball and the president of the Hall of Fame and nobody else. And so, I mean, to sit in that room where it's literally the only people in the room are me, the commissioner, and the Hall of Fame, it was my first one. And so they introduced me and they made me get up and say a few words. And I'm just like, this is insane. And I just remember saying something to the effect of I've never felt like I belong in a room less, but I've never been more grateful to be in this room. And that just, I think every year when that happens, it is going to blow my mind that I'm sitting in a room with all of these people who are the best living to ever play the sport.
Yeah, it's incredible. I mean, that's why I called this from 818 to Cooperstown, just to see. I know
818 to 607. That's my new area code.
Crazy. Beautiful. Beautiful.
But I kept my 323 cell number. So I'm still, I think it was the first cell phone I got at the Dodgers. I've still got the same number.
Muy bien, muy bien. So those of you who have the number, you know, he's not going to big league you. So he's going to get back to you. So, you know, now you talked about the real work starting. And, you know, I've always known you as being so steeped in baseball history, dating back to when you were a kid. So this is definitely, I mean, we both, you know, you've lived such a life where being able to be Peter Pan and kind of see so many idols come up in front of you. But now you're in leading the Hall's future. And what are you looking forward to most about this opportunity? And the other thing is, now are you able to root for all 30 teams?
I do. I mean, it's weird to say it, but I really have become now a fan of all 30 teams and frankly, more a fan of players. I mean, you get to know all these people on a individual level. And so I obviously grew up a Dodger fan, but over a decade, I really kind of in a weird way lost that and truly became a Diamondback fan, which I didn't think was going to be possible. I really felt like how do you lose something that's been with you for 35 years? But when you're living it and you're around the team every single day, I really truly became a Diamondback fan over the last decade. And now I'm not going to be around them. I really am going to root for all 30 teams and just good baseball. That's what I've always loved in the game and the people and the players. So in terms of what I'm looking forward to most about the opportunity, it's really just this place is so special to so many people. And it was for me the first time I came, and anybody who's been, I think, knows that experience. What I want to make sure we're doing is continuing to stay relevant for the next generation so that when my son, who's a huge baseball fan, my daughter less so, but when they walk around the Hall, I want them to be as wowed as I was the first time I walked around the Hall. And that's, I think, important to me that whether it's adding technology, whether it's new exhibits, whether it's traveling exhibits, whether it's just making Cooperstown top of mind and a place to visit. I know a lot of people come here for the youth baseball tournaments. That's really what I'm looking forward most to, is just how do we continue to keep this place relevant for the next generations, the next 82 years that we're open. I mean, there's only been 8 presidents of the Hall of Fame, which is just kind of a crazy, impossible thing to imagine. But I hope that the 16th president is as revered by the job as I am right now, and that the place is as cool to the people walking into it as it is for me and for those who have come before me.
Well, think about it. I mean, yeah, 8 people. Wow, that's just...
Yeah, pretty hard to believe.
Oh man, well, we'll give you Yogi Berra's number for that, since he's probably the greatest number 8 to wear that number. Well, speaking of greats, I mean, you have had the opportunity to work with two of what I would say are the two of the largest personalities of the last 50 years. Bobby Knight, when you were at Indiana, you worked with him there, and also Tommy Lasorda at the Dodgers. Can you share a story about them? Share stories about them?
Sure. I'll start with Coach Knight, who I didn't get to work with nearly as close as Tommy. I mean, I was a student assistant, so it's not like he really knew who I was or cared. But there's a great story. In fact, I just actually went last night I was in Syracuse last night because Indiana was playing against Syracuse. And I took the trip up and unfortunately saw us lose in double OT. But Indiana basketball was very close to my heart. And my junior year, I got lucky enough to take a class called Technica Coaching Basketball with Coach Knight. And it was like the hardest class to get into. I have no idea how I actually got selected, because there's only probably 50 kids in the class. And these are mostly Indiana born and raised kids that, I mean, Tommy, Bobby is as the biggest name they've ever, I mean, they just, they can't believe that the God is walking into the room. And so I can remember he walked in the first day. He didn't teach all, I think he probably taught about a quarter to a half of the classes. And then he would have his assistant coaches come in and teach it as well. But he comes in on the first day and the whole room is kind of, they're just following him across the room. Like they can't believe that he's here. And he kind of comes up in front of the room. He says, I'm going to teach you all everything you need to know about coaching right now on the first moment, first day of class. And everybody's like, oh my God, what's he going to say? And so he looks into the class and he sees this kind of heavy set kid in the middle. And he says, what's your name? Stand up. Kid's like, I'm Johnny. He's like, Johnny, I want you to run over to that door over there. I want you to jump as high as you can. And I want you to tap the door frame as high as you can. So this kid kind of waddles over there. He's clearly not athletic. And he waddles over and he leaps up and as close as he can, he kind of tips the bottom of the door frame. And Coach Knight goes into his wallet and he pulls out a $20 bill and he pins it up like an inch or two higher than where the kid had just jumped. And he's like, I want you to run. And if you can touch that 20, it's yours. And the kid waddles over, as you can expect, leaps up and gets 2 inches higher and hits the 20. And he says, motivation. Coaching is all about motivation. You have to figure out what motivates people. You have to figure out how to make them be better than they believe they can be. And everybody was like, wow, that's a pretty impressive way to. So that's probably among my favorite Coach Knight stories. I got a chance to meet him several times later over the years with Tony La Russa, who was pretty close with him. So, but that's probably my favorite one on Coach Knight. For Tommy, and it's interesting because I often combine the two. I do think of the two of them because they're both these large personalities. Like you said, I've never seen anybody other than the two of them command a room the way that they did. You can't be in the room without knowing that they're there. And other celebrities can come in and not be the focal point, but those two are just whatever room they're in, they were the focal point. So my best Tommy story I can't really share because it's totally inappropriate. So I had to come up with this. I've got to come up with a second one for you. But Tommy, over the course of, I don't know how many years, 15 years or so, 20 years of working with him, he aired me out probably on 3 or 4 occasions where it was kind of fun to get aired out by Tommy, but you didn't want to be because he was important. But I remember one specific one where he really wanted Ralph Avila to get a lot of love in the Dominican. And so he basically told me in spring training, at the start of spring training one day, hey, Josh, I want you to put together a sheet about Ralph Avila and everything Ralph has ever done. So I go into Derek Hall, at the time, the Diamondbacks senior vice president of Dodgers senior vice president of communications. Now he's the Diamondbacks president. I said, Derek, Tommy wants me to put together a sheet about Ralph. I don't even know what he's talking about. He said, he probably wants you to do a press release, but we're not going to put out a random press release about what Ralph has done in the Dominican. That just doesn't make any sense. So I don't do it. And like 3 days later, you know how Tommy used to sit in the dugout at Holman Field, Holman Stadium. So he comes over to me right before the game. It's like 6 minutes before first pitch. And he says, hey, Josh, where's that blankety blank sheet I told you to put together? I said, I didn't do it. You didn't do it. And he just starts tearing me a new one. And the best part about it is like everybody can hear him. I mean, it's Holman Stadium. He's 3 feet from the crowd and he's just tearing me a new one. And my parents had come out to visit and they were sitting like 7 rows back and they're watching Tommy and his crooked finger up in my face. When I tell you to do something. And so I've gotten on the other end of a lot of those and I've had so many great stories with Tommy, but that one just cracks me up in terms of just knowing my parents, like afterward, they were like, did you just get aired out by Tommy in the middle of the home, right by home plate, right before the game? I said, I did. That was, you saw what you thought you saw. So pretty, Tommy was the best and, obviously a huge loss for the game this past year. I'll never forget that the childhood manager that I grew up idolizing, I got a chance to get to know.
It's amazing. And I know having gotten aired out one very memorable time because I wore the wrong color Dodger cap. Yep. So it wasn't blue. It was purple and gold right after Guggenheim took over and Magic, they did a Laker night. Okay. Aired me out. And it's funny. I went to our buen amigo Mitch Poole. I said, Mitch, do you got like anything I could wear? Cause it's Arizona. You can't, I mean, and look at my head. So I can't, I wouldn't be able to survive. He got me a regular cap. I saw Tommy a couple hours later. I hope you burn that cap. I was like, that's yes, Tommy, whatever you say. But yeah, you know, you know, you talked about, you know, we talked a little bit about that rise, you know, going from marketing intern all the way to VP of communications, you know, it's not something to be trifled with. It's not like starting on third base. You started at home plate and you worked your way around. So with a lot of hard work and a lot of ganas, what advice would you give to a young person kind of starting a similar internship, whether it be in, you know, at a ball club or in some avenue that they're looking to get to gain a foothold?
You know, I'd probably give them the same advice that I got when I was that freshman intern at the Dodgers. Robert Schweppe was essentially the assistant GM. They didn't really call it that back in the day, but he was Fred Clair's right-hand man. And at the time, I thought I wanted to be a general manager, and I thought I knew I wanted to work in baseball. I thought I wanted to be on the baseball operation side of things. But I asked him, like, what should I do if I'm trying to get to your seat or Fred's seat? The two pieces of advice he gave me back then still absolutely hold true today, and there's no question they had a huge impact on my career. One of them was to learn to speak Spanish, and he said, you want to work in baseball? Go speak Spanish. Like, go take it seriously. And I mean, just like a lot of people, I grew up, I took it in high school, I took it in junior high, but hola, me llamo Josh, dos Coca-Colas, por favor. I mean, you didn't use an accent, and you kind of tried not to sound like, and I really decided – right when he said that, I went back to Indiana. I took it again my sophomore year. I took it again my junior year. I studied abroad in Spain for a semester. I actually had a Spanish girlfriend, which always is a great, great way to learn. I wound up learning a lot of Spanish from her. And I really just made it a point. Everything from listening to Spanish music on my commute to the stadium to I took a semester, or excuse me, an off-season off between 01 and 02, and I backpacked around South America. I just, $25 a day, I would stay in crummy hostels and just talk to people on buses. And I really, learning Spanish, it has played such an enormous role in my growth as an executive and just as a human on the planet, and getting to be able to speak to so many players, coaches, broadcasters, media members, random people on buses in South America that I never could have had if I didn't take that advice seriously. So that's the first big one. And the second thing he told me was go read as much as you can and get as broad a based background as you can when it comes to business and sports. He said, don't just stick to your department. Don't just get the internship in marketing and only talk to marketing. Go talk to other people. Go read the Wall Street Journal. Read the collective bargaining agreement, which is somewhat fitting given where we are in baseball at the moment, tonight's deadline. But he gave me the collective bargaining agreement in 1995, and I read it start to finish so I could understand it. And I took his advice. I wandered down the hall and started talking to other people that weren't in my department. One of them ended up being Derek Hall, who became the president of the Diamondbacks and moved me, whatever it was, 15 years later. So you just, I think, really opening your eyes to the whole industry. You obviously have to work in one department. Everybody has one department they work in. But I always wanted to learn more about group sales or sponsorships or merchandising. And that's certainly paid off now that I'm overseeing a whole company. I understand, I'm certainly not the expert in those areas, but I understand enough of it. And then speaking Spanish, I'll use it this weekend when I'm live on MLB Network. Here's a little plug. If you want to see who makes the Hall of Fame, part of the era committees this Sunday night on MLB Network, I'll be the one who announces if anybody gets in. And if we have any players who are of Hispanic descent, I'll be doing it in English and Spanish. And so that's a pretty cool, a couple pieces of advice that I just think are timeless and really valuable to me.
By the way, I have a feeling you had a hand in the Hall of Famer Don Jaime Jarrín joining the Veterans Voting Committee. Big, muy bien, muy bien.
It was awesome. It was a huge honor to call him and ask him to serve on that committee. And he sent me a note and said, "I think I'm your first appointment as the president. You're the first person I'm the first person that knew that you've appointed, and I'm honored." And it's right. He really has been incredible to me in my career, and I've learned a ton of Spanish by just listening to his games. I used to. When the team was on the road, I would go home and listen to him as opposed to the English language side, just so I could pick up Spanish phrases, terms, etc. So, an amazing human.
Well, I want to do a quick way back to about 16 years ago, and whenever I've talked to young people who want to work in sports, and I've always told them to be nice to their teachers, because you never know when it's going to be able to help you. Because I tell them the story about how back in 2005. When I interviewed with Camille Johnston and then with you for the director of publications position with the Dodgers, your very first question to me was, did you ever have my mom? and I said, yes, I was on the Sundial two semesters. We got A's both years. Your mom, Dr. Cynthia Rawich, as I said, she was my journalism professor. And how before, when it came time that, to call references to see if I was for real, you called mom first. And so, I want to tell everybody here, you know, how indebted I am to you for that phone call, to Camille, to you and Camille for, you know, sticking your necks out and saying, yeah, okay, this is the guy, and brought me back to sports, and I'm so grateful. And so you can either take partial blame or credit for us being here right now.
I will take a little bit of the credit, but the credit really mostly belongs with you, because I've always felt like anytime you hire somebody, yes, somebody's making the decision who you're hiring, but you're hiring them because of what they've done. So you deserve all the credit, and I'm glad that my mom trained you well. It certainly benefited me all the years that you were doing publications in our department.
Oh, well, that was, I got to be, gosh, I always summed up my job was I got to talk to today's and yesterday's Dodger heroes, and I got to turn it into a magazine at the end of the month. And
it's pretty cool.
So that was, that's 1% of all of the work, but that went right into, but no, it's just awesome. But yeah. And again, a big shout out to your mom, Cynthia. Muchas gracias otra vez.
I'm sure she'll watch this. So thank you, mom, for sending Jorge our way.
Yeah, definitely. And I'm going to make sure you watch it on YouTube, and please make sure you like and subscribe so that you could get all your football information. But let's talk a little bit about little football. And, you know, you're a dyed in the wool Broncos fan, and because one of the things we didn't talk about, I mentioned at the beginning, you're a big football fan and fantasy football fan. How are you feeling about the team this year? The AFC West is really, you know, neck and neck. No one's running away with it, and you know, especially after that big win against the Chargers this weekend.
Yeah, I mean, it is definitely up for grabs, and I don't think anybody thought that. I mean, everybody just thought the Chiefs were going to be this dynasty for a long time to come, and somehow they've come back down to earth a little bit, and we got a big battle with them this weekend. But, it's hard. I think just like any team, when you lose some of the big names that you've had for a long time and that are your favorite players, you almost have to kind of re-fall in love with your team over and over. And Von Miller was a favorite of mine. He's now back out in L.A., and I was getting all excited that Drew Locke was going to be the quarterback of the future, and suddenly Teddy Bridgewater's out there. So just, I think they've surprised us. I don't know that all of us thought that they'd be battling the Chiefs in whatever this is, week 13, with a chance to take over the lead of the division. But I do remain a huge Bronco fan, and it all goes back to 1986 and John Elway being in the Super Bowl and me hearing that, hey, here's this kid who grew up in Granada Hills who's on your TV. And I was 10 years old, and he threw a long touchdown pass. I can't remember which of the three amigos. It was either Mark Jackson, Vance Johnson, or Ricky Natil. But Ricky Natil was my favorite player from that point forward, and the Broncos are my favorite team. So we'll hope this is a good year for them. I don't know that I'm not going to be calling AFC championships anytime soon, but I'll certainly be rooting for them.
Oh, well, and they get their Mahomes or their next Elway. So
yep, exactly.
Actually, I've often compared Mahomes to Elway. Kind of. Just that swashbuckling style. I think they're just so similar. Would have been, I guess it would have been nice for you that they went to the Broncos, but at least you get to see them twice a year.
Yep. Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, you know, you got me in 2006 into the True Blue Fantasy Football League, the Dodger front office league, which is still going strong. And shout out to Greg Morrison, my co-commissioner. Still plenty of your old friends in the league, Josh. So if you ever feel a need to come back, but I mean, something that you started, kept going with the players, you know, you've continued to play all this time. What are your favorite formats? Superflex, PPR, non-PPR?
Yeah, I mean, we've done the last several years. It's funny. I used to be I think at my peak, I was in five leagues. I'm like, this is too much. I got to dial that back. Then I was in four. Then I was in three. And this is the first time I've only been in two in quite some time. So it's rather strange to only be in two. Both of them are half point PPRs. They were kind of snake drafts. I do not have the bandwidth to figure out the auction drafts, even though that was. That's how we used to. When I first started doing rotisserie baseball in 1986, it was auction style, me and all of my 10-year-old buddies doing. God, it's funny. I never thought about the fact that that was the same time I fell in love with the Broncos. But we started doing pizza party and actually auction bidding and all that stuff's fun. But I think one of my leagues has two flexes. One of them has one. I've never been in a league with two QBs. It's kind of the two leagues that I'm in. One of them is the same league I've been in with my college buddies since literally, I think, 1998 or 99. It's mostly the same group. You get somebody coming in and out. So all the years that I would have been in the Dodger League, this would have been another one of my leagues. The other one I'm in is called Trader's Paradise. It is run by Tom Candiotti. It is my, as I call my expensive league. It's a chance to win or lose a lot of money. And it's called that because there's just trade. There's constantly trades going on. People are just like, it's most fantasy leagues, you're not seeing two and three trades a week, but like Candy's always trading. The other guy on radio in Arizona, Greg Schulte, is part of the league. He's always mm-hmm. trading. Derek Hall's in the league. And so it's just, it's a constant, it is a matching of the wits. It's a fun, it's a really fun league I'm in. So those are the ones that I've, those are the two I'm in this year.
Do you get the crazy, hey, I'm giving you three guys for one offer. Do you at least get them to kind of, is Candyman famous for that?
Candy is definitely famous for, the thing is though, I will give him credit. Like he, sometimes he trades, I think, just because he wants to see a new team come in. Like he kind of gets bored with his team and he'll just trade three guys for, or trade one for three. So, yes, you get some pretty ridiculous ones, but you also, I mean, in order to have that many trades, you got to, a lot of them are fair. Most of the 90% of them are very fair. And you look and you go, man, how come all of my leagues can't be like this? We should all be trading this much. It's just, it's a lot of fun. It's been a blast being in that league. I won it last year, so I won a lot of money last year, and it covers me for probably about the next 3 to 4 years if I'm not any good in there. We'll see. This week I'm basically the way they do this one is actually the playoffs. There's only four teams out of 12 that make it, and the first week of the playoffs is 2 weeks, and the second week is 2 weeks. So it's basically this is the last week, and I'm 6-6 in this one. I have to win, and I have to win pretty big for me to get into the playoffs in order to jump over the other team. My other league, I think I'm pretty much set to go to the playoffs and looking good going in.
Oh, man. Well, yeah, it's nice to be 2-for-2. But even 500 is pretty good in baseball, I heard.
Yeah. It's not easy, man.
No, it's not easy. I'll leave out the 2007 championship that I got you by a point or two. So
that's funny.
We'll leave that one. That was the Tom Brady, Peyton Manning. Adios mio. Well, no. One of the things. Well, this year, who have been some of your big hits and maybe any disappointments for you?
I'd say my biggest disappointment, or my biggest dumb move, I'd say, was that after week one, I got offered a trade. I had Dalvin Cook. I still have Dalvin Cook, which is going to be a challenge now. But and I got offered Ezekiel Elliott and Justin Jefferson for Dalvin Cook. Now Zeke was coming off of like a 5-point week one, and everybody was wondering if this guy's any good. Dalvin was like 18 points, and Jefferson was like 9 or 10 points, and I turned it down. And I think, like, oh my god, like if I'd have taken that deal, the team that got lucky that not have their deal taken is now like 10-2, and I'm like I said 6-6. So that was my that was probably my pretty dumb one. I'd say I think I took Lockett in the fourth round, and that one hasn't turned out particularly good for me. But I did take Fournette in the eighth round. That's been a pretty good one. So yeah, I've had just like any, I've got some bad and I've got some good.
Yeah, Fournette. In fact, I interviewed so before the season, I interviewed a beat writer or insider for every team, and my Tampa Bay person was Carmen Vitale, who was an intern for the Dodgers in 2013. Now she's now she's writing for Bucks, oh, cool. Buccaneers.com. I asked her, can you look into your crystal ball? Is it going to be, and she says it's going to be a committee. It's going to be a committee. So yeah,
that's what everybody thought. But, and speaking of Tampa Bay, I'll tell you the other big move I made this year was right around the time, I think it was like week six, that Antonio Brown was looking like he was going to be the same. I mean, he was a beast. And I was like, okay, I gotta sell high on this guy right now. And I moved him for Hunter Renfro and Khalil Herbert. Renfro's been huge for me. Herbert wound up, whatever, for about 3 or 4 weeks, was a great fill-in when I had Edwards-Helaire was down. And literally like 2 days after I dealt them, Brown got hurt and he hasn't played since. So I literally had, I had the best 6 weeks of Brown. He got injured. And then I basically have had Hunter Renfrow and Khalil Herbert in there for the last, so that's probably my best move so far of this season. But that's the best part. I mean, everybody's got moves that they love. Everybody's got moves they hated that they did. That's what I love about fantasy football. It's just, it's the best.
Oh, it is awesome. It is so awesome. Now, this year, there's been kind of a reckoning with, you know, the first round running backs. So many of them have gotten hurt, stayed hurt. Some have been out for the season. Just, I mean, it's just horrible. Now, one of the things that I'm seeing is some, you know, being on the analyst side, is I'm seeing other analysts start talking about the 2022. What are we going to do about that? Are we going to start ranking wide receivers higher up so that they're going in the first round? So maybe it's more 50-50. Can you see yourself kind of wavering, kind of going away from going RB heavy at the beginning of a draft and maybe kind of balancing it out a little more?
Yeah, I mean, I've always kind of been a running back heavy sort of guy. I just said the challenge from my standpoint, and it's always the case, I mean, wide receivers, they are a bit of a crapshoot. And, you know, I grabbed, I think, Brandon Cooks early this year, Tyler Lockett early this year, even Claypool and Juju I had. And, like, they're like every week, these guys could be the best receiver in the league, or they could end up being terrible. So I think I'm going to continue. My guess is, and don't show this to any of the teams that play in my league, but I'll probably continue to go heavy running back early just because you know you're getting carries, and then you try to keep finding guys like Hunter Renfrow, who's on nobody's radar, but is putting up a 12, 15 spot every week now because he just gets so many catches. My guess is I'll continue to stay heavy on the running backs and just kind of keep taking flyers, load up on wide receivers and find whichever one of them breaks out after about week two or three.
Yeah, especially when you look at like the two best wide receivers this year, Cooper Kupp and Deebo Samuel. I mean, they were both taken after other wide receivers on their team.
I'll tell you what though, I'm so mad at myself. Like I remember reading something that was high on Kupp, and he was on my like try to get this guy, and I missed him in both drafts by like a pick or two. I would have gotten him. And man, he's making or breaking a lot of teams this year. He's just been a beast.
Oh, he's been phenomenal. I know I've got Kupp on one team that where I picked him just kind of like I think I'd gotten aced out on Robert Woods. And so and Deebo was like a eighth round flyer. And all of a sudden he's just like carrying a team. So
sometimes you get lucky, too. Somebody takes the guy you want and you wind up taking someone else and that guy goes off. So, you know, I'm sure there's an example of that. Everybody's got one.
Oh, awesome. Awesome. Well, you know to hit me up if you ever got any start sit questions. So if you're ever stuck. So so you know, this being Familia FFB, so we always play up our as you said in one of your initial text messages, it's like, I hope you become the Mexican Matthew Berry. We always love to talk about food with our invitados. And so have you been able to find good Mexican food in your new hometown or nearby?
Oh no, sadly. And that's actually my wife's biggest excuse me complaint, is that when she looked at Cooperstown, she thought, man, there's no Mexican food here, what are we going to do? And she loves Mexican food. We moved here, and I had heard that there was a place called Jalapeno, as in like Hall of Fame, but Jalapeno was the name of a restaurant that used to be here and it closed down. So my wife read that there was a Mexican food place that was opening up in town. It did open up about 2 weeks after we got here. It's called Natty Bumpo's, which is Natty Bumpo was a character in James Fenimore Cooper's famous books that made Cooperstown, Cooperstown. It's not so much Mexican food as it is kind of Latin fusion. It's got a lot of, it's not your typical Mexican food. I've been told that there's a decent Mexican food place about an hour away in Schenectady. And I know that there is at least authentic Mexican food place about half an hour away in Oneonta, but no, in Cooperstown, we are lacking that and we need it. So if anybody wants to move to Cooperstown, build a place on Main Street and bring some good Mexican food to baseball heaven, we would love to have you here.
I tell you, you're making me want to open up a food truck over there. So, get some nice tacos.
Food trucks don't work, though, from about November to March out here.
That's true.
So you're going to need an actual building at least. You can see I'm wearing a fleece. It's like we're in the 20s right now outside.
I just feel okay. So I'll remember that. I'll send you a couple of recipes. At least I'll send you one of the easiest thing to make, beans. So
there you go. Thank you.
You can have that. And I even discovered a dairy free cheese sauce that's fantastic. So
nice. Yeah. Well, and we have a guy, Roger Lansing, in our offices here, who makes homemade salsa out of tomatoes that he grows at his house. And he gave me a jar maybe about 2 months ago. And he's like, I'm almost ashamed to give this to you because you came from the Southwest. Like, this is not going to be the sort of salsa you're used to. We loved it. My wife was like, this is amazing. This stuff is so good. So you can find it. It's just hard to find out here.
Oh man. Well, anything's worth finding. And you know, well, I'm so glad I'm so glad to have found you as a friend and colleague, and that the Hall of Fame chose you as number 8. So, you know, I called this episode 818 to Cooperstown or 607. And, you know, we really touched on your career highlights. If I'd have told you 30 years ago, when you were playing baseball for Chatsworth High School, that you'd be sitting in the seat you are now at the center of baseball history, what would you say? And what would you say to that kid?
I mean, there's simply no way I could possibly have believed that it would turn out the way it is. And I've told this story a couple of times. It's actually on my desk behind me here. I have a Joe Torre replica plaque because I grew up going to Joe Torre baseball camp. He was a broadcaster for the Angels. I was a catcher. I remember him coming and giving catching lessons. I can still remember the drills he taught me as a 10 or 11 year old. And in I think the camp was in Encino. And I think about, like, what are the odds that this guy's given this little kid a lesson in 1985, 6, 7, somewhere in there. And 20 years later, we'd be colleagues at the Dodgers standing on the Great Wall of China. Like, never in a million years would I have believed that. But then the fact that, I mean, he was a failed manager turned broadcaster. And I'm an 8-year-old, 9-year-old kid. And then he becomes arguably one of the greatest managers in the history of the game. And we're sitting on stage together at Derek Jeter's induction. And I've told him, like, it is an impossible to believe story, but it is, in my way, I guess, of knowing, like, you have dream. I didn't dream this big. I certainly just kept loving the game. And there's no way I could have ever imagined my career ending up here, but I'm incredibly grateful that it has.
Oh man. And what would you told that kid?
Yeah. That kid probably thought he was better at baseball than he really was. I mean, when I was that age, I was still an all-star. And like you said, I mean, I played at Chatsworth, but Chatsworth was not what it is now. I mean, I remember when I was at Chatsworth, actually somewhat fittingly, it's Christmas time. They're probably still selling Christmas trees because Tom Musebourne used to say, we used to sell Christmas trees and we would raise money. Here's a Jewish kid from the Valley. I'm selling Christmas trees. I don't have any family to sell Christmas trees to. And Coach Musebourne would say, I'm going to turn this into one of the top programs in the country. And we were, I think my senior year, we were ranked like 8th in the state or something like that. We were one of the better teams in LA City. But we were not this national powerhouse that Chatsworth became with draftees left and right and all these guys going to. So, I mean, I would have probably told that little kid, like, keep believing that baseball can take you somewhere. Because even if you can't do it on the field, at that age, I had no idea that there was a such thing as a front office or that there were jobs that you could have like this one. And so I probably would have told that kid, even if, like, don't give up on your dream, even if baseball stops for you after high school, like it did for me, because the places baseball can take you are unbelievable.
Oh, unbelievable. And this has been unbelievable, mi amigo. This has been awesome. And everybody, first off, un millón de gracias to you, Josh, and everybody, make sure you're following him on Twitter at @HOFPrez. He gave the first shout up. Make sure you're tuning in on the on MLB Network. When is that one again?
This Sunday night at 6:00. So if you tune in, you'll see if anybody. I know there's a lot of Dodger fans there. We have several Gil Hodges, Maury Wills among the names that I think most people in LA are thinking about, but there's 20 guys, 10 in two different eras, that are going to be looked at as by a committee of 16, and they've got to get 12 votes in order to be enshrined in July here in Cooperstown. So we'll see what happens this weekend, and then you've got the BBWA vote in January. So lots of exciting things going on. You can follow our Twitter or Instagram accounts. We're at Baseball Hall. So easy to follow that group. And there's actually a good number of active Hall of Famers on Twitter. So guys like Rod Carew, Fergie Jenkins, these guys are tweeting every day. They love they just love interacting with fans, and you get a chance to talk to some of these guys. So go on Twitter. You can see, look at the group that I follow, or just search the Hall of Famers, and you'll see a pretty impressive list of people to follow.
Oh man, well, this has been really impressive, mi amigo, and everybody, familia. This is todo for our show. If you haven't yet, please like and subscribe us to our YouTube page. Also, make sure you're following us on Apple, Google, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. And thanks again to Anchor for putting our independent podcasts out there. Also, make sure you're following our original content at familiaffb.com, where you'll see the audio for this. And follow me at JorgeMartin17 on Twitter, and also Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Familia FFP. Otra vez, Josh, thank you. And familia,
muchas gracias.
Un placer en familia. Remember, todos somos familia. Salud.